kalpanta etad akilam chatarena grinnan shete puman swadrigananta sakastadanke yanna bisinduru hakanchana loka padma garbhe dyuman bhagavate pranato smitasmai. My dear Lord, at the end of each millennium, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, dissolves everything manifested within the universe into his belly. He lies down on the lap of Sheshanag. From his navel sprouts a golden lotus flower on a stem. And on that lotus, Lord Brahma is created. I can understand that you are that same Supreme Godhead. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Dhruva Maharaja's understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is complete. In the Vedas it is said, Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati. Knowledge received through the transcendental, causeless mercy of the Lord is so perfect that by that knowledge the devotee becomes acquainted with all the different manifestations of the Lord. Lord Kshirodakshayi Vishnu was present before Dhruva Maharaj, who could also understand that the Lord's other two forms, namely Garbhodakshayi Vishnu and Karanodakshayi Vishnu. Regarding Mahavishnu, it is stated in Brahma Samhita, Yasyaika Nishvishita Kalamathavalambhya Jivanti Loma Vilaja Jagarandanata Vishnur Mahansa Ihayasika Lavishesho Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. At the end of each and every millennium, when all the material worlds are dissolved, everything enters the body of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, who is lying on the lap of Sheshanaga, another form of the Lord. Those who are not devotees cannot understand the different forms of Vishnu and their positions in regard to the creation. Sometimes the atheists argue, how can a flower stem sprout from the navel of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu? They consider all the statements of the Shastras to be stories. As a result of their inexperience in the absolute truth and their reluctance to accept authority, they become more and more atheistic. They cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But devotees like Dhruva Maharaj, by the grace of the Lord, knows all the manifestations of the Lord and their different positions. It is said that anyone who has even a little of the Lord's grace can understand his glories. Others may go on speculating on the absolute truth, but they will always be unable to understand the Lord. In other words, unless one comes in contact with a devotee, it is not possible to understand the transcendental form or the spiritual world and its transcendental activities. Today, we are reading from Canto 4 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 9, Text number 14. This chapter is entitled Dhruva Maharaj Returns Home. Dhruva Maharaj returning home can be understood both internally and externally. The Supreme Personality of Godhead being very much pleased with Dhruva Maharaj's humble execution of devotional service is appearing before him. First, the Lord personally manifested his beauty and opulences within the heart of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, in the great ecstasy of love of God, was meditating on that beautiful form of the Lord. The Lord disappeared. Dhruva Maharaj was so startled to lose the treasure of his life, opened his eyes, and saw that same form of the Lord right before his eyes. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. The eyes that we have are made of flesh and blood with so much water. These material ingredients can only see what is of the same substance of itself. The five senses are composed of earth, water, fire, air, ether. Therefore, they could only perceive that which is constituted of earth, water, fire, air, ether. Thus, the senses cannot perceive the subtle elements, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, or those thoughts, that intellectual discrimination cannot be perceived by the senses because it is of another nature. The senses, the subtle senses, can only perceive what they are constituted of. Just like if a person is blind, the mind can imagine thoughts of something, but the mind cannot actually see it. It needs the senses to facilitate that seeing. In this material world, there's a saying, it takes one to know one. Unless you have a certain degree of knowledge and experience, it's simply impossible to really understand a person with a higher degree of knowledge and experience. So Dhruva Maharaj, by the grace of the Lord, when he opened his eyes, he wasn't seeing with his eyes. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. Because his eyes were decorated with the ointment of bhakti, prema. Through that spiritual substance of prema, he was able to see the spiritual form of the Lord. It's like if a person has defective vision. Through spectacles, that person can see things as they are. So in the beginning stages of spiritual life, our vision is defective. We don't know who we are. We don't know why things are happening to us the way they are. We do not know what to do, how to do it. Om Agyantimirandasya Gyananjana Chalacha. We are born in the darkness of ignorance. But the spiritual master, he gives light. If we see through the eyes of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then at least theoretically we can understand what is what. It is said, Prabhupada often quotes the verse, the one who sees through the eyes of the Acharya can understand what is actually what. Otherwise we cannot. We're seeing everything through our mundane senses and our contaminated egoistic perceptions, both within and without. So a neophyte devotee, it is very important that adosha titata sadhu sangota bhajanakriya. He develops faith. Faith in the association of devotees. Through that faith, the devotees teach the aspiring bhakta how to actually see what is what. And actually, our vision is based on faith. We cannot actually see Krishna in every atomic particle. We cannot see Krishna situated within the heart of ourselves and every living being. We cannot see how the laws of karma are actually working. We see certain effects, but philosophers have been speculating why there is suffering in this world since time immemorial. We cannot see what is the heavenly planets, what is the hellish planets, what is the spiritual sky, and what are the planets floating within the spiritual sky. When we offer a flower to the deity, we cannot actually see the deity of Krishna picking it up and smelling it. When we offer bhoga, a food, to the deity, we do not see how the deity is actually glancing and tasting it. The holy name of the Lord. We're not actually able to experience the form, the qualities, the abode and the pastimes of the Lord within his name. We accept all these things on the basis of faith. But faith is based on philosophy, logic, and the authority of the scriptures and the great self-realized souls who have direct experience, direct access to the transcendental nature of all that is. Thus, to make spiritual advancement, we must see through the eyes of faith. And when we actually become purified by the grace of the Lord, then he gives us this bhakti or prema. Then we can actually see the soul, the spirit soul's nature is awakened, and the soul can even see through these eyes and hear through these ears the substance of the Lord. Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Ras Vigraha. The glory of the holy name, it is full of the ras of the spiritual world. It is Chintamani. All our desires can be fulfilled through even one recitation of the holy name offenselessly. So our faith is given to us on the basis of Krishna's mercy. The determination to live by that faith throughout our lives comes only by the mercy of Krishna. And the ultimate realization by which we can actually directly experience Krishna as he is, within and without, is only by the mercy of Krishna. That mercy comes through the spiritual master, through the Vaishnavas, through the scriptures, and through the Lord within the heart, according to our desire and the sincerity of our desire. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they would often use this terminology that the perfection of human life is to go back home, back to Godhead. This means, after we leave this body, inevitable death must come. We do not have to take birth again in this material world. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvata tyaktva deham punara janma naiti maniti sorju. One who understands the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities never takes birth in this material world again, but returns to his eternal abode. Going back home, back to Godhead. Krishna's abode is our only real home. A home is the place where we find shelter. A home is a place where we find peace. Home is the place where everything is very naturally we're acquainted with. When we're traveling in a foreign land, so many mysteries, so many uncertainties, so much unfamiliarity. But when we come home, we're in our natural place. Of course, in this material world, sometimes people's home is more hellish than a foreign land. That is andakupam, in a miserable condition of envious, greedy, materialistic life, the home becomes like a deep, dark well, Prahlad Maharaj said. No water, only suffering. But still, even people become so conditioned that they feel a natural comfort in that well. But our real home is the spiritual world, where there is everlasting peace, where there is unlimited, ecstatic, loving relationship with all of our family members. The family members of the soul, aham bija pratapita, Krishna is the father of all living beings. In the spiritual world, everyone is perfectly united in unlimited ras, or the ecstatic mellows of love, singing the glories of Krishna in everything they do, everything they speak. Vrindavan is that place where all walking is dancing, all speaking is singing, And Krishna's constant companion is his flute, which intoxicates the hearts of all. That is home. And actually, that home is within our heart. It is not that we have to die to go back to Godhead. The realization of our relationship with Krishna can be experienced even while living in this material body. To know Krishna, to love Krishna, is to go back home, back to Godhead. That is why that prophet said about a Vaishnava, whether you live or die, it makes no difference. Because you're serving Krishna in your spiritual body within your heart now. And that will just be further manifested when you return to the spiritual world. A great devotee of the Lord knows Krishna within, may act externally according to the conventions of a Vaidhi Bhakti, Bhakta, for the sake of teaching others and out of his own natural humility. But within the heart, there's that very, very deep longing to be united with Krishna. And in that longing, Krishna reciprocates personally. So Dhruva Maharaj, he returned back home, back to Godhead, by meeting his eternal father, Krishna, in the forest of Madhuban, on the bank of the Jamuna in Vrindavan. Gokul Vrindavan in this world is not different than Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world. Little five-year-old Dhruva is seeing Krishna directly with his spiritually saturated eyes on the bank of the Jamuna in Vrindavan. He returned home. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's telling little Dhruva Maharaj, after hearing his beautiful prayers, that you should go to your father's home, King Uttanapada. And there you should perform the duties of a king in due course of time. So he's sending him to his material home. In this way, Dhruva Maharaj is returning. He's actually in this beautiful chapter. He's returning to his spiritual home of seeing Krishna. And he's returning to his material home. For what purpose? To perform the will of Krishna. Harivo. This is my dear friend Rishi from London, England. Everyone, please welcome him to Sri Radha Gopinath. Thank you for coming. By sending Dhruva Maharaj home, the Lord is teaching the world through him what is Yukta Vairagya, the principle of Srila Rupa Goswami. How to utilize whatever we may have, whoever we may be, even our position in society, in the loving service of the Lord. In the name of devotion, to simply renounce everything in this world is considered to be incomplete renunciation. A higher degree of renunciation is to utilize the things in this world for the highest purpose of pure devotional service. So in one sense, Dhruva Maharaj attained perfection in the Varnashram consideration, because he left home. He went to the forest. He was a vanaprastha at 5 years old. Usually people enter into vanaprastha order of life when they're 50 years old. Divide that by 10. Dhruva Maharaj took vanaprastha when he was 5 years old. He renounced his family. He renounced everything. He went into the forest and he was living there. And he became a perfect Vaishnava. He's having the direct vision of Krishna. Tears are flowing from his eyes. He attained the stage of bhav, of divine love. He had no concern with going back to that kingdom. Running a kingdom is full of so many problems. And we see later on in his life, he had to deal with so many complications, implications, and difficulties. He had to declare war on the race of yakshas. He actually had to go to their city and attack. And there was a big, very, very great battle that took place. Dhruva Maharaj was organizing his soldiers. He was fighting. That's what a king has to do. So much trouble. It would have been easier for him to just stay in the forest of Vrindavan on the bank of the Jamuna, just meditating on Krishna and chanting his holy names. He had no material desires to be fulfilled. He had no longings to aspire to achieve. But the Lord told him, go home. Get married. Have a wife. Have children. Eventually take over the kingdom. Tax the citizens. Protect them. Manage the administration. Build up powerful armies. Give punishment to the wicked. Reward and protect the innocent. So Dhruva Maharaj, he went home. Even though his home was actually a very, very difficult place, because he had already been horribly insulted at home. When his stepmother, Suruchi, chastised him, he was just a little five-year-old boy. He wanted to sit on the lap of his father. A child needs to love and to be loved. And at that age, your parents are the natural object of your love. And from your parents, you desperately need to feel that love. When a person gets a little older in this material existence, in our conditioned state, he starts to try to expand that giving and receiving of affection through various other forms, through friends, sometimes through the nation, to humanity, to all living beings. It's like the idea of vegetarianism from the moral point of view is people actually want to show their affection to innocent animals. Why should they suffer and die just because we like to eat them? So there's a sense of affection. But Dhruva Maharaj at that age, practically the real reciprocation of affection is from the mother and father. The stepmother insulted him. You are born of a lower birth. This is really caste consciousness. You are born of a lower birth. Your mother is inferior to me. Therefore, you have no right to sit on the lap of your father. If ever you want to take that position again, then you should die and take birth again in my womb. So that was very disturbing that he heard this. And he looked at his father for shelter to protect him from that pain. And the father, being too much attached to his wife, Suruchi, he said nothing. He ignored Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was looking for love. He was looking for shelter. But it wasn't there. So his heart was shattered. And Srila Prabhupada explains, when the heart is shattered, it's like a clay pot. When a clay pot is broken, it's very difficult to put all the pieces together. Only by the grace of God is it possible. And Dhruva Maharaj, although he was 5 years old, he was actually a Kshatriya. Different people, they deal with broken hearts in different ways. Some people just go into a room and cry and don't want to see anyone. But Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted to conquer the world in revenge for the offense that had been committed to him. He ran to his mother, Suniti, and she was brokenhearted because she couldn't help him. She said, "Dear Dhruva, I have to say that what your stepmother said is correct. Your father loves her more than he loves me. There's nothing I can do. Due to me, you have to suffer." So she was suffering as much as him. Due to the natural affection of a mother, her heart was broken as much as his was. So Dhruva Maharaj, with his lips trembling, his limbs shivering, his eyes flowing with tears, not in ecstasy, but in agony, he said to his mother, "I want a kingdom greater than my father and my grandfather." Because he wasn't allowed to sit on his father's throne. His mother, she was a simple lady. It wasn't that she was a great pundit of the scriptures. It wasn't that she was a austere yogi who had all kinds of mystical revelations. She was just a simple mother. But she was a bhakta. She had faith. She had faith, which was the very essence and conclusion of all knowledge. Faith that we're completely dependent on the mercy of God. She told Dhruva Maharaj, "If you pray to God, if you surrender to Krishna, He can fulfill all your desires." Dhruva Maharaj, he was in such an impassioned mood due to that pain in his heart. He asked his mother, "Where will I find this Krishna?" Mother said, "You go to the forest. We have heard the stories, how great sages and rishis, they go to the forest, and there they see Krishna." So he left home. 5-year-old child. Left his mother, the comforts of the palace, to go deep, deep into the forest. It was all due to the anguish of pain within his heart. He was severely brokenhearted. It's very difficult to actually comprehend to the extent his heart was shattered, because he had complete faith in his father's affection, and his father rejected him. For no reason except Dhruva wanting to just show love for him by sitting with him. By the mercy of Krishna, one gets Guru. By the mercy of Guru, one gets Krishna. Chatur vidha bhajante mam. Krishna explains in Gita that four kinds of people approach him. Those who are in distress. Those who are in poverty. Those who are inquisitive. And those who are sincerely seeking the absolute truth. So Dhruva Maharaj, he approached the Lord in distress. He wanted relief. And the only way he could get relief was to become the king of the universe. Hare Krishna. The earth planet was not satisfactory to him. But he was approaching God with great determination. He had faith in the words of his mother. This was his qualification. Ado Shraddha. Rupa Goswami tells us, in the beginning there's faith. Ado Shraddha Tat Sadhu Sangha. When we have that faith, Krishna, who is within the heart, who is the seer of everything, he directs us to the spiritual master. So Dhruva Maharaj, in the middle of the forest, he met Narada Muni. And Narada Muni tested him to see if he was actually sincere. He said, you should go home. Don't take these little things seriously. You're just a child. Dhruva Maharaj said, I cannot hear what you're saying. I'm determined to see God. So Narada Muni, he taught him the process. He initiated Dhruva Maharaj. He gave him the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he gave him the process by which he could restrain his senses from materialistic life and completely absorb his senses in the loving service of the Lord. He taught him how to make a deity and worship it. He taught him how to constantly meditate on the holy name within his mouth and within his mind. He taught him how to reduce his sensual activities to the point where he even gave up eating and sleeping. He informed him of the nature of the form of the Lord and how to meditate on that constantly within his heart. Within 5 or 6 months, Dhruva Maharaj became completely purified. Adosha Dittata Sangu Sanguta Bhajanakriya. This is Bhajanakriya, the process of bhakti. Hearing, chanting, worshipping, praying, remembering. And through this process, anartha nivritti shat. All of the materialistic attachments and misconceptions within his heart were eradicated. He actually became pure. And in that pure state, he developed nishtha, strong, strong faith, conviction. Then ruchi. He actually could experience the nectarine taste of service to the Lord. Millions of times more satisfying than anything of this world. Then ashakti, He developed such intense attachment to that Lord that was revealing himself within his heart. And then bhava, the preliminary budding, sprouting seed of love of God. And then when he opened his eyes, he saw who was Krishna. He realized his relationship with Krishna. He attained prema bhakti, pure unconditional love, perfection of all existence. And after all this, the Lord sends Dhruva Maharaj back to his kingdom. You serve me there. That is what I want. Staying here in the forest may be good for you, but you go to the kingdom and lead the world in God consciousness. That is good for the world. In one sense, the Lord established that a preacher is more pleasing to him than someone who is simply living in Himalayas or in the forest for their own salvation. So Dhruva Maharaj, because he was acting as a family man, performing the duties of his particular occupation, in a spirit of devotion, everything he did was accepted by the Lord and was simply increasing his attachment to the Lord. If we act in this world for our sense gratification, we become more attached to the senses and their objects, and we become further distant away from the Lord within our heart. But if we perform the same activities in the service of the Lord, under proper guidance of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then our very activities increase our attachment to Krishna and our love for Krishna, because they're for the pleasure of Krishna. Sarvopadiva nirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktaruchyate. By engaging our mind and senses in the service of Rishikesh Krishna, we become purified, and in the purified state, our love gets deeper and deeper, because Krishna reciprocates with the offerings of his devotees. So this is the power and the glory of bhakti. Whether one is a businessman, whether one is an industrialist, whether one is a doctor, or a farmer, or a politician, or a student, or a housewife, or a software engineer, whatever one may be, yat karoshi yadashnashi yajutadoshi tadasi. Perform your actions as an offering to me, in my service, with love and devotion to me. And we're always home with Krishna. In this particular verse, we find Dhruva Maharaj offering prayer. How you, my Lord, are that same Supreme Personality of Godhead who appears as Mahavishnu, Karano Dakshayi Vishnu. And simply by his inhalation, all the cosmic manifestation, which includes all the universes and all planets within, enter into a state of dissolution and enter into your belly, into your body. Just by inhaling, All creation goes into the body of the Lord. And as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, when you want to create, a lotus flower comes out of your navel. And by your own arrangement, Lord Brahma, the primeval being of the universe, is born. Srila Prabhupada is explaining here how atheistic people or unfortunate people, they cannot believe this, that there's Garbhodakshayi Vishnu and a lotus flower is coming out of his navel and a person is born from that lotus flower. These are all stories. Some symbolic moral principles are trying to be taught through these imaginary stories. But Srila Prabhupada explains that this is the factual, scientific understanding of creation. If we have some little drop of the mercy of God in our lives, then by that mercy we can understand the unlimited nature of Krishna. He has achintya shakti, inconceivable potencies. He is abhijna swarat. He is independent and all-knowing. He can do anything. His pastimes are transcendental to what is possible or impossible in this mortal world. If you wanted to create a universe, what more pleasing way would there be than to be just laying down and having a lotus flower sprout from your navel? Makes sense, doesn't it? And then Lord Brahma, who is Atmabhu or Swayambhu, he just manifests, born on that lotus flower. And then you just lovingly teach him how to love you, and then tell him how to create. And then you empower him with your energies, and he creates, and you just lay there and watch while you're empowering him to do the work. Isn't that a pleasing way to create the universe? What would you want to do? Go into some laboratory and try to figure out what are the elements and experiment in various ways till you can somehow or other get the proper modes of nature in the proper formulas? Krishna doesn't have to do that. If we want to manufacture something as human beings, we have to go through so much trouble. Such evolution. It's like Thomas Edison. He somehow or other had this vision that he wanted to create light, artificial light. He actually made experiments thousands of times, and every one of them was a failure. He worked for years and years and years of his life. He writes in his own diaries, thousands of times he failed in his various efforts to create a light bulb. Then somehow or other, he just got this mysterious inspiration, which wasn't from his intelligence. It wasn't from his mind. It was just an inspiration from his heart. Of how he's supposed to do it. And then he just, according to that enlightened idea that just came from the Paramatma, Krishna in his heart, he tried again, and there was the light bulb. Actually, Krishna created the light bulb, not Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison was just the hands that Krishna used to do it. And it was a really crude light bulb. Have any of you ever seen photographs of the kind of light bulbs that he made? If anyone were to use it today, they would be considered in total backward, antique poverty. And since then, because he just basically started the process, then people just took what he gave his life to develop, and people developed on that, and developed on that, and developed on that. And now we have all these kind of laser beams and incredible types of lighting that were unimaginable at the time of Thomas Edison. So this is how things are created. The first automobile was invented in France. And if you've ever seen a photograph of what it looks like, it was just some sort of a wagon that somehow or other moved. And then some people in America, they saw this idea, they got the plans of how this person did it, and they somehow invented this little buggy that moved. And then Henry Ford, he didn't really invent it. He just took what was already generations and generations of evolution in how to make something move. And he just added to that and made his Model T. And then when he took it out on the road, everyone was riding horses in those days. That was the natural way of traveling. There was also some trains. But when the automobile, when people saw the people on the horses, they just thought, this is completely ridiculous. This is just total waste of time. What are they doing all day like that? They used to say, get a horse. That was, get a horse. Something like when they see a Hare Krishna with shaved head and dhoti, people say, get a job. That's the mantra. I don't know, in India, they think it if they don't say it. But in America, that's the common thing. When people say a devotee, they say, get a job, which means you're just wasting your life. Just get job, make money, enjoy. What is this nonsense? So similar, get a horse. That means you're just wasting your time with these little moving buggies. Then he created assembly line. And now look at the cities of the world. My God, you don't see a single horse. Everyone's driving cars. Unimaginable. Bigger highways, and the cars, how they developed. The Wright brothers in Dayton, Ohio. I used to preach there. In fact, the first college I ever preached to in my life, Krishna consciousness, was called Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. I was pujari for many years at Ndu Vrindavan. And then I was told, go out and preach. So I didn't know how to preach. Prabhupada said I should just repeat what he says. So I was reading his book, so I tried to repeat. And I was thinking that actually, Prabhupada taught us that if we could make the intelligent class in the colleges devotees, then they can make so many other people devotees. But how to preach in colleges? So the first opportunity for a college I ever had was in Ohio at Wright State University, right next to the place where Orville and Wilbur Wright invented the first airplane. It's named after them. I remember it was a very nice lecture. I began by offering my respects to Prabhupada and to the previous acharyas. And then for everyone's satisfaction, I offered my appreciation of the Wright brothers, because they are the heroes of that place. But did you ever see photographs of the plane that they invented? It was like a little kite with a motor on it. And somehow or other, one man was just kind of sitting there, kind of hanging. He wasn't really sitting. The seat was like something he was kind of hanging from, and he was holding on, and there was little wings, and he was pulling ropes like this to get the wings to steer. And it just went up in the air. It took them years and years of failures. Every attempt they failed, and all their friends and well-wishers were saying, give up this nonsense idea. Men are not meant to fly. But they would just look at the birds and say, they think if the birds can do it, why can't we? So even though they were being humiliated, they were being chastised, they were being laughed at by everyone, they thought, ludicrous idea, men flying, what nonsense. But they try, and they get up and crash, get up and crash. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times they would just go into their laboratories and make their sketches and make their little motors and make their wings, and then it would just crash. Never worked. Somehow or other, they got an inspiration from within. It wasn't that they actually figured it out. They got an inspiration from within of how to actually do it after years and years of trouble. This is our philosophy. If you really dedicate your life to the effort through failure after failure after failure, when Krishna, the Paramatma in the heart, really sees that you're serious and you really want it, he gives you the knowledge. Sarvasya cha ham hridishta nivishto matasmitir jnanam apohanam cha vidaishta sarver aham eva vedyo vidanta krit veda vedeva cha ham. Krishna says, I'm seated in the heart of every living being. I am the source of remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge. And the ultimate knowledge is to know me and to love me. So they tried and tried again, and finally they succeeded. And their success was that it just went like about 100 yards and then came down. And everyone was saying, they did it, they did it. There was only a few people there. And from that meager little beginning, then people just took their ideas and just developed it and developed it and developed it. And then Charles Lindbergh, he was the hero of America for a while. Then everything changed. But he actually was willing to take his little plane, the Spirit of St. Louis, and fly across the Atlantic Ocean. That's pretty serious risk. This little plane, only one person can fit in it. By that time, planes were just flying, you know, little distance at a time. And he decided to fly, I think, from New York to Paris. Hare Krishna. Across the ocean. If something goes wrong, because they didn't go that high anyway. If something went wrong, you know, in the previous planes, you just somehow or other, you know, just fall to the ground and fix it. But when you're in the ocean, there's nowhere to stop. So the whole world was on the edge of their seats. And in those days, there wasn't the type of radio communications where he could say, you know, right now I'm at latitude and longitude number this and that. He just left and nobody knew where he was. They just had some approximation when he was supposed to arrive in Paris. And there was hundreds, thousands of people waiting there to see whether he does it. And people were just, there was no televisions. They were just sitting in their radios like this. What's going to happen? Whole world was thinking of him. And after some time, they just see from the sky comes the Spirit of St. Louis with Charles Lindbergh with this little mask on, steering wheel, and he arrived. It was a big, big effort. Now, who cares? There's thousands of big, big 740, not one person, but 500 people in a plane. And they're going across the ocean thousands a day. Nobody cares. Nobody's listening to the radio. Nobody's there to greet them except maybe their loved ones. And even then, they usually just tell them to take a taxi home. It's no big thing. And now rocket ships going into outer space and satellites and Sputniks. So creation of anything by man takes generations and generations of trial and error and thoughts. But God doesn't have to do that. He wants to create a universe. He's just blissfully laying down. And just by his desire, this beautiful lotus flower comes out of his navel. Not like a lotus flower of this world. This lotus flower is transcendentally beautiful, effulgent. And by his sweet will, Brahma just is born on the whirl of that lotus. And Krishna impregnates him with the power and the knowledge to perform the secondary activities of creating the universe. So why not believe that? Why atheistic people think that this is just some fantasy story? Because they're thinking God must be like us. You know, he should be a mechanic. He should be an architect. He should be an engineer. He should do all these things to create a universe. But Krishna, with his inconceivable, unlimited opulences, simply by his desire, everything happens. And why not doing it? Why not that he do it in such a beautiful, mystical way? So when Krishna himself, who is the author of the scriptures, Vedaischa sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham, Krishna says, I am the compiler of the Vedas. When Krishna reveals to the world personally how he creates, why not believe it? There's every reason in the world why not to believe it. Our mind, our misled intelligence, can create so many reasons. Unless one's heart is touched by the grace of God, it is impossible to have faith in the absolute truth. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he did not believe that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to his study of the scriptures, the Lord is Tri Yuga. He appears in three yugas. He does not appear in Kali Yuga directly as an avatar. Gopinathacharya actually quoted the scriptures to prove that he does appear in Kali Yuga, according to the scriptures, in a beautiful golden form. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya couldn't understand that. He couldn't accept that. And there was so much logic and philosophical debate going on, and ultimately Gopinathacharya just came right out and said it as it is. He said, you cannot understand that God is right in your home because you have not received the mercy of the Lord. You are simply in ignorance because you have not been touched by the causeless mercy of the Lord. Only a person who gets that grace can understand Krishna as he is. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, we're relatives. Why are you so angry with me? But then later on, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because he performed Agyata Sukriti, not even knowing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was God, he had a certain type of fatherly affection for him, and he wanted to help him. He rendered some service to him. And he was also associating with a devotee like his brother-in-law, Gopinathacharya. And due to that association, and due to that agyata sukriti, that unknowing service that he rendered, he received the mercy of the Lord. And he could understand perfectly and fully who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Dhruva Maharaj, how does he understand these things? 5-year-old boy, and he was a Kshatriya. He wasn't a little Brahmin sitting in the Gurukul getting his sacred thread when he was a little child. How does he know who is Garbo Dakshayi Vishnu, who is Karano Dakshayi Vishnu, how he is creating? How does he know that this person standing in front of him is the very Vishnu who is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of everything that exists? And he's speaking such intimate scientific knowledge of the absolute truth in his prayers. How does he know these things? It's not by studying. It's by the grace of the Lord. He desired when he saw the Lord, he felt such love. He wanted to praise the Lord. But in order to actually offer proper praise, there has to be knowledge. Otherwise, what are you going to say? Just like if I want to praise Sanat Kumar Prabhu. In order for that praise to be meaningful, I have to know something about him. If somebody who just sees him on the street for the first time, who doesn't know anything about him, even his very name, what praise can he offer to him? But the more you know about someone, their character, their nature, their activities, the more you could really glorify that person with your heart and soul. So we must know God before we can actually glorify God. To the degree we know, to that degree we can glorify. But Dhruva Maharaj didn't know anything. Narada Muni just taught him the form of the Lord and how to meditate and how to chant the holy name. He became purified. The Lord was standing in front of him. His heart was so enraptured in ecstatic love. The Lord was so merciful. He descended from Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, just to stand right in front of Dhruva Maharaj to give him his mercy. Dhruva Maharaj felt indebted. He felt unlimited gratitude. He wanted to reciprocate. What can you do for the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He's independent. He's self-satisfied. What does he need from us? But he's very pleased when we offer him our love. He becomes conquered by that love. So Dhruva Maharaj wanted to express his love by glorifying the Lord. But he didn't know poetry. He didn't know Sanskrit verses. But he had a desire. He had a deep, profound, and pure desire that, my Lord, I want to please you. I want to glorify you. Thus the Lord touched him on his head with the conch shell, with a satisfied smile on his face. You have satisfied me. You have served my devotee, your Guru Maharaj. You have, with determination, given your life and your soul to realize me. You have taken to the process of purification with such enthusiasm, determination, and patience. I'm pleased with you. Therefore, I will give all knowledge to you. And by being touched by the Lord impregnated it within Dhruva Maharaj's heart. The mysteries of the secrets of the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Knowledge and understanding of the scriptures. And here he is praying. And Srila Prabhupada explains that the real essence of this verse is how the small 5-year-old child Dhruva Maharaj is able to understand creation of the universes so perfectly, because he had received the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We find today big PhD scientists They are speculating like anything as far as the origin of the universe. Years, generations go by. People dedicate their entire lives to this subject, and they're considered to be the most learned thinkers in the world. And they come up with these theories, and they try to back these theories, which are such incredible chemical, biological, astral, astronomical data. Big Bang Theory. You know, as devotees, sometimes we make fun of the Big Bang Theory. We say, it's such a stupid thing. There's some bang, and the universe came out of the bang. Huh? We even have dramas I have seen where somebody just throws something down, and the universe, why the universe, there's a bang, why the universe didn't come. But actually, these scientists, it's very, very sophisticated what this Big Bang Theory is. The essence of it is as foolish as what we're talking about, that everything's just coming out of a bang. During Diwali, there's so many bangs. There's no universes. In Bombay and Diwali, there's millions of bangs, and they're big bangs. They cause such terrible disturbance. Why, out of all those millions and millions of bangs, not one universe has ever come out? Not even a planet. Nothing comes out except pollution. But actually, the scientists, their idea of the Big Bang Theory and their explanation, there's volumes of books with all kinds of technical, biological, chemical, astronomical data to support why they've come to this conclusion. Hare Krishna. And then somebody else comes around and makes volumes and volumes of volumes of books based on all kinds of experimentation and observation and all kinds of other data to show that the Big Bang Theory is not really the way the universe is created. There's something else. The biggest brains in the world are speculating generation after generation to try to figure it out. And they can't. And at the end of their lives, there's a big bang. What happens? They die. That's the ultimate big bang for them. The soul leaves their body. They don't know where they're going. They don't know which universe, which species of life. They don't know any. They're totally ignorant as far as where they're going to go after death. But here, little Dhruva Maharaj, he has perfect, explicitly accurate understanding of how the universes are created. Because he has received the mercy of the creator of the universe. From within his heart, Krishna is giving all knowledge and all realization. Not only is Dhruva Maharaj understanding perfectly how the universe is personally, in such a beautiful and wonderful way, created, but what is the purpose of the universe? What is the purpose of creation? What is the perfect purpose of life and how to achieve it? All these things were perfectly understood, realized, and directly experienced by Dhruva Maharaj. Not because of his advanced intelligence, but because of his humility, because of his devotion, because of his unconditional surrender. Krishna is revealing everything to him. But what is most important is Dhruva Maharaj seeing Krishna as the ultimate object of love has understood the very nature of the soul beyond this creation. And Dhruva Maharaj is enraptured with ecstasy. Pure, eternal, spiritual ecstasy. the sattvika bhavas, the various transformations of ecstatic love were manifesting on Dhruva Maharaja's body. So the conclusion is, if with humility and devotion we become servant of the servant of the servant of the great devotees of the Lord, and with sincerity we render service by following those divine instructions, then the same result will be achieved. The perfection of life, to experience pure unalloyed love of God. So Dhruva Maharaj is going to be sent home to express his love through his occupational work. People ask, how can I work in this world and be spiritual? There's so many materialistic things in this world you have to deal with. How can you be spiritual? People are trying to cheat you. People are trying to attack you. People are trying to ruin you. How can you be spiritual in a world like this? Dhruva Maharaj shows how. By simply harmonizing one's love for God and the directions of the great souls into our occupational life. Then there is no difference between our sadhana and our occupational duty. One is an expression, an extension of the other. Through our sadhana of hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, we develop attachment, love, and devotion. And through our occupation, we express that love and devotion for the welfare of others. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? And the amazing thing, very amazing thing, is if Dhruva Maharaj's father just told his wife, "Shut up, woman. I'm your husband. Don't tell me what to do," which is what many husbands would do, and just took little Dhruva on his lap and embraced him and said, "Don't, I'm here to protect you," we would never have heard of Dhruva Maharaj. He would just be another king from days of yore. But he suffered. Suffered! Suffering of the heart is more severe than suffering of the body. Suffering of the body is very intolerable. But when the heart is broken, it's indescribable by words what misery one has to endure. But actually, there's a saying, the darkest moment comes before the dawn. Because Dhruva Maharaj experienced such suffering, when he turned to God, it wasn't just a mediocre Hindu. He wasn't a mediocre Hindu who just goes to God in the temple and says, "Namaskar, God, Bhagavan ki jai. Bhagavan ki jai ho." And gives some donation and looks around to make sure people see how he's giving nice donation. He wasn't that type of a person. He was desperate. He was suffering so much. If he didn't know God, if he didn't realize God, there was nothing for him to live for. He took shelter wholeheartedly. So actually, we should understand that Krishna arranged for him to be put in that miserable condition where his heart was broken by his own father, because he wanted to give Dhruva Maharaj the ultimate bliss, the ultimate realization. But before Dhruva Maharaj could wholeheartedly come to ask for that, he had to find a devastating frustration in this material world. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, one cannot actually approach a spiritual master in the right consciousness unless one has really experienced the frustration and the futility of materialistic life. Then we actually approach for shelter, for meaning, for hope. Then we're actually serious about what we're doing. So Dhruva Maharaj, because of the pain he suffered, he was serious about becoming God conscious. He was serious about making a solution. Actually, his seriousness was to make his material life better. It wasn't to realize God. It was to make his material life better. That was his seriousness. But he approached God for it in desperation, seeking shelter. And because he approached God with such sincerity, for shelter, under the direction of a bona fide guru, he became completely purified. And when he ultimately saw God, he was a perfect being. He was a saint. And then Krishna told him, you wanted to be king of the world? Be king of the world. This is what you approached before? Go and do it. Hare Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj says, I don't want to do it anymore. Looking for the fame, the glory, the power, and the pleasures of this world was like looking for broken pieces of glass. But in seeing you, I have found the rarest, most priceless diamond. I don't care for these things. The Lord told him, you always remember me. I'm always with you. Now go and perform your duties. So the sufferings and miseries of this world oftentimes open the doors to the unparalleled eternal pleasures of the spiritual world, if we see it in such a light and take proper guidance. How to perceive the mercy of God, the mercy of Krishna, even in the most difficult situations, is actual wisdom. And that wisdom is the foundation of the greatest fulfillment. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.